Hello and welcome to the Stringer Podcast number 51. Thanks for sticking around. I'm continuing to use this time in isolation to edit and upload older interviews we have in the can. Or more accurately, Dylan is editing old interviews we have in the can. It should never be forgotten that he's the one that does most of the work around here. This week we've got a conversation with the talented creator out of Edmonton, Alberta, the gateway to the north, the festival city, home to North America's largest mall, and of course that NHL team with the world's best player as their captain. He's the host of Avery Sports Show, co-host of the Brad and Avery Hour, web host for the Edmonton Stingers, correspondent for Inside Super League, and most recently he interviewed one of my favorite Detroit Pistons players to ever wear the jersey, John Sally. You know him on Twitter as @Avery. You know him on Instagram as @AveriSports. He's a small town, big city, huge-hearted, self-starting digital sports journalist who has never chosen to limit himself by the leagues he covers, the people he talks to, or the hats he'll wear. I've got Avery Lewis McDougall. He's coming up right after I tell you about t-shirts. Stringer Labs is teaming up with local and national charities to help connect all of our listeners directly to causes that we have a personal connection to and are in need of additional support through COVID-19. 100% of the proceeds from these limited edition shirts goes directly to those who are helping Canada get through this. Shirts are only $25, and you can find more on the designs and the charity partners by heading to thestringer.ca. Also, if you work with a charity or are close to a cause and want to team up on the project, you can hit me up on Twitter @Chancellor so we can figure something out. In light of our big weekends continuing to be spent at home, self-isolating, taking care of ourselves and our community by doing our part, I want to continue to highlight some of the cool stuff we've seen people creating during this social downtime turned creative boom. A while back, we recorded a pod with Jerome Chang where we went through all of our favorite Marvel movies, pitting them up against each other in a bracket-style challenge and determining a winner, which is definitely Civil War. If you listen all the way through that one, then Jerome's Marvel Cinematic University pod is likely for you. Jerome, along with Jake Christie and Anthony Canton III, break down everything in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they're currently doing character retrospectives. The Iron Man episode is great. Check out Marvel Cinematic University on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening to my voice right now. If you're creating something and you want to share it with the world, hit us up on Twitter @StringerPodcast or by email podcast@thestringer.ca and we'll check it out and give it a pump on an upcoming episode. Did you know that every single minute, this totally sounds like a read, but it's not. Every single minute, 500 hours of content is uploaded to YouTube. That means if you wanted to watch all the content that has been uploaded since the moment you press play on today's podcast, and you're willing to not take bathroom breaks, not stop for something to eat, and just sit there and watch every clip back to back to back, it'd take you 62 and a half days. And by the time you finished, there would be another 5,137 years of content waiting there for you to watch, uninterrupted. It's astonishing. For me, YouTube has always been synonymous with music videos. Having received my start in music and then moving on to film and television, music videos are the ultimate combination of my two favorite art forms. And when it comes to watching these mini movies set to a strong backing track with some sort of story that unfolds, generally starring some of your favorite artists, there's not a band I associate more with YouTube music video binging than Pete, Patrick, Andy, and Joe, who came together to form Chicago's Fall Out Boy. Now, I always took my association between Fall Out Boy and YouTube as being purely a generational thing. I was at the right age, in the right time of my life, experiencing the right things when this band hit. But the more you dig into it, you realize that I'm not the only one who thinks this, and in fact, there's compelling evidence as to why. Back in the mid-2000s, Fall Out Boy was tagged as the most popular band on a little social networking site known as MySpace. Remember it? Millions and millions and millions of people became fans, met fans, listened to MP3s, and, following YouTube's launch in February 2005, were able to watch embedded videos. 2 months after YouTube went live, on April 12th, Fall Out Boy drops the music video for the first single of their upcoming major label debut, From Under the Cork Tree. The video was directed by Matt Lenski and follows the persecution and then eventual redemption of a boy with antlers. Since the band yielded the largest fan base on MySpace, and that fan base had just discovered that YouTube allowed them to upload and embed their favorite music videos, sugar were going down hit and hit hard as people all over the world began discovering YouTube and by association Fall Out Boy for the first time, forever linking the band to online music video binging for people like myself and millions of others like me. Here's Sugar We're Going Down, then the Sax, then Avery. Oh, because the mics run through the box. Yeah. Oh shit! I didn't know that. we upgraded the studio, and I'm still trying to figure it all out and trying to like understand. Well, see, as you could tell, I didn't even know the boxes had to be on, but that makes complete
there
sense.
There you go.
Because all the microphones pass through the boxes. How we looking, D-Will? Oh, thumbs up from Wilson. Avery on the podcast. Hey, buddy.
How you
this
doing?
Is like I feel like this is months in the working.
I think
of
so.
Us trying to find a time, trying to find a time when you're in Toronto.
Yes,
bouncing around three different cities.
That is correct.
And then it just you're like, yo, I know I'm gonna be in the city on today, which is October 25th when we're recording this. Do you have time? And I'm like, let me check with Dylan because Dylan's actually the big boss with everything. Thumbs up from Dylan. He gets more love these last couple months with Sportsfeld than he ever has in like years and years of working with me.
He's finally getting
the recognition he's always deserved. Yet outside of the intro, the guy doesn't get on the microphone. He refuses to. He's too shy. We're trying to work it at him. We're trying to encourage it. What's going on with you? What brings you to the city?
I am well, being with you, Clayton, doing the podcast, but also my uncle's getting married tomorrow.
Your uncle's getting married.
Yes, first marriage.
Congratulations to him.
Yes, it'll be interesting.
Shout out, by the time this comes out, he will already be married, maybe on a honeymoon. He will have taken lots of notes that he can pass on to you and me on how to be a successful husband in life.
Exactly. And the funny thing is that now with my uncle getting married, the family's come over from the States, from Jamaica, from England. All the families come over on my dad's side for wedding tomorrow afternoon in Mississauga.
Is that how diverse your background is?
Oh, my background is nuts. My background, do you want the breakdown?
I would love the breakdown because then afterwards I might ask you what national teams you cheer for in soccer, but let's first start with your family's breakdown.
Okay, here's the breakdown. My mom is Trinidadian.
Okay.
Dad's Jamaican. Grandparents are Trinidad and Jamaica.
Right.
And my great grandparents are English and Scottish.
Oh my goodness. So you got everything mixed out. So how did your English and Scottish grandparents, I'm guessing one moved to Trinidad and the other one moved to Jamaica.
Actually, at first one moved to Barbados and then to Trinidad. So the nations are even more. And also too, I also have an East Indian great-grandmother as well too.
Holy
So smart. That's about seven different nations going on there in my background.
It's the United Nations just when we come to one of Avery's family events. Is there a large population that moved from England or from Scotland, you said, right?
Yeah.
England or Scotland into the islands? Or did they just like wise up long before anyone else and was like, yo, we can get out of the rain and live in the sun?
Oh, they came to the islands a long time ago, back in 1800s. A lot of people immigrated from the UK to Trinidad, Jamaica, Barbados, because my last name is Lewis McDougall, a very English Scottish last name.
Very much so.
So yeah, a lot of them came to Trinidad. So you'll see in the West Indies, you'll see a lot of people in Trinidad are avid tea drinkers, like the British people. They drive on the right side of the road, like in England. There's a lot of influences in the West Indies from the UK.
Interesting. And when you visit family, do you go down? Do you ever travel to Western Europe, or is that too far removed? That more you go down into some of the warmer climates, whether Trinidad or Jamaica.
I want to go to Scotland one day and see my roots because it's funny because my last name, Lewis, is actually Nord of Lycleen. It's a fake last name, technically.
Lewis is.
My great-grandfather, the original family name was Hope, and he changed it to Lewis, and no one knows
why.
And
is that on the English side?
It is, yes.
And McDougall is from the Scottish side.
And no one knows why.
Interesting. And was it, did they figure out when it happened? In history, like at what point they went down and it got changed?
Not exactly, no, because record keeping from back then in Scotland and England and Trinidad it's very shoddy. It's all handwritten notes.
Yeah.
And handwritten notes from 75, 80 years ago are probably destroyed.
Yeah, they're dust. There's not much there. Oh my goodness. So we were first linked.
Yes.
Because of, before we got on mic, you said that you've known Jeff Viette for going on a decade
long
since 2012,
time. Very long
and he's
time.
A longtime friend of mine. But we were first introduced through basically, I'm going to call it the remnants of the blogosphere in the hockey world. It's more like the Twitter sphere, I guess, now is what we'd call it. But you've been, you know, actively writing and conducting your show for, I'm thinking, 2010? 2008.
Yeah.
I'm doing you a disservice.
I got started back when, if you had a podcast in 2008, there was no Twitter. Facebook was still pretty small. I had to physically email people my link to my show.
But it was web hosted?
It was, yes.
You weren't emailing them the audio file.
No, it was
web-hosted still a link.
On Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yes.
Interesting story. So we are hosted and we work with Spreaker.
Okay, that's right.
Spreaker, their founder was the founder of Blog Talk Radio. Spreaker is actually the descendant, the great-great-grandchild of what was Blog Talk Radio. When we moved to them in the summer, we had a long discussion with them. They kind of they explained, you know, our rep and they explained their roots and they explained how they came to where they were.
Yes.
And I remember the Blog Talk Radio days because it was what we thought was going to be the new wave of how we took in radio,
exactly.
Let's say, but it just took, I think, a little bit longer than any of us thought.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And back then, I had a lot of guests back on that. I had on Gene Principe for Sportsnet Radio or TV. I had on Kevin Weeks. He was on my show many times. I had a guy, dude named Gabe Morency. Gabe Morency, he was a host from the Score in the mid-2000s. This is when the Score was very much going to radio and uncensored content. I had him on a few times. And when I realized my show was taking off, Avery Sports Show, was when I looked in the numbers and I saw for one episode I had 4,000 listens.
Wow.
I was 15.
And this
years
is
old.
Like in 2008, 2009.
It's like, holy crap. And from that, I went down. I used to go down every year to Canton for the NFL Hall of Fame inductions with my dad. And I think what was interesting is that being a Canadian kid at 16 years old, you truly see how big the NFL is. NFL juggernaut was going from covering the CFL to the NFL. I think my biggest moment of being in awe was standing at a urinal, taking a pee, and who walks up beside me? Who walks up beside me, Colleen? But Kurt Warner.
Wow.
Kurt Warner. I'm standing there like, holy crap, I'm frozen.
Yeah.
Like, what do I do? Do I say hello?
You zip it up first, probably. You put it away. Maybe wash your hands first.
Like, it blew me away.
Yeah.
And you know, covering the Hall of Fame inductions for the NFL was great. I interviewed Rich Eisen, I interviewed Shannon Sharp, interviewed Marshall Faulk, interviewed Deion Sanders, who was okay guy, but but you know what?
Yeah.
Some guys aren't great, some guys are great, but it was still very cool just seeing how that was, like how just NFL works as a media enterprise back then.
Interesting. So NFL inductions were the first thing you did. Now, does your dad have a history in sports? Is that how
he does, yes.
Because that's like quite the invite to get.
Actually, it's funny because people are surprised they got into media because my dad was a triple jumper at Kentucky University.
Triple jumper?
Yeah. My mom was a fashion model. So people always wonder, your mom's a model, your dad was an athlete. How'd you get into media?
Right. You just took the best of both worlds.
Yeah. So my dad ran track and field at Kentucky for 2 years and then he transferred over to Abilene Christian for his last 2 years. He's from Toronto, or Toronto area, and he came to Edmonton originally, where I was born, to compete in bobsled in the Olympics '92.
That's so your dad went from a track athlete to a bobsledder.
Yes.
My goodness.
Didn't pan out, and then he got into, I still don't know how he got into bobsled and track into fashion. Like, mm-hmm. there are different stories, but he can tell you the official story.
Yeah.
He got into fashion, met my mom in fashion, and they started up a clothing store in Edmonton called Colorblind, which was one of the first hip-hop stores in all the country in the 90s. So they brought in a lot of brands that are well-known, like, you know, the brand French Connection?
Yeah, of course.
They brought them into Canada.
No way.
That was them. They were the first one to bring
and
that.
And that's
into
your
Canada.
Roots.
Yeah.
So how do you see that working itself out in your life? Like, because, yeah. okay, we're going to get to the media thing in a minute, but you have such a strong fashion background, and mm-hmm. I find that interesting because yeah. I have a couple friends, some of which have been on the podcast, that are heavy into the fashion world, and I know, like, I'm sitting here yes. wearing a t-shirt from the Starters, I have to look down and know what I'm wearing, and a hoodie that is actually just a sample hoodie that was sent to us to see if we're gonna get anything with a Stringer logo on it. But you must see fashion, or at least those influences from your mom and also your dad's time in it, work itself in throughout your life, or even just how you spent most of your childhood.
Of course. Like, you know, when I was younger, I didn't truly grasp fashion. I wasn't really, like, I thought it was, it's kind of boring. I didn't really get it. I think when I got into university and started working on TV at my school's TV program, because mm-hmm. we used to do a weekly news show at Nate, which is where my university, ACR and CTV too. Mm-hmm. And I think the first one really hit me that fashion is really in your blood was when my dad got me from his company. He used to work for a company called Jesus, a Dutch label. He was the brand president for Canada. Mm-hmm. He said to me, "Hey, I got a pair of teal pants I want you to wear on air."
Hmm.
And I was thinking,
you're like, "Dad, I'm a little old for you to be picking out my yeah. wardrobe."
I just thought it didn't work. It was like teal aquaish. That was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And I would go on camera, like, just very plain dress shirts, pretty plain suits. Like, you know what? What the heck?
Yeah.
Went on camera, and everybody said, "Whoa, those are great. Those are great on you." And it was like aqua dress pants. Like, you know what?
But it was the teal. They yeah. popped.
It was like, you know what? Screw it. I'll yeah. wear it again.
Yeah.
So I became known in Edmonton as, yes, here's the young teenage reporter.
Yeah.
But look at what he's wearing. I started wearing orange blazers, pink blazers. I have a blazer that I've worn many times. You might have seen it on Twitter, where it is green and white. It's an all-white suit with green leaves as the design on it.
Wow.
I've worn that, and people have said to me, "Dude," I had one guy years ago tell me, "Dude, only you could pull that off. If anyone else pulls that off in the media world, they'd be called an a-hole."
Right. Now, is it true that almost no attention is bad attention? That anything you can do to draw attention to yourself, mm-hmm. whether it's standing out in how you dress,
yeah.
or maybe it's how you speak, or the type of stories that you pursue, did you find that opened a bunch of doors for you?
Oh, it did, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I know one of the first teams I covered in sports was the Edmonton Oil Kings in the Western Hockey League. And I met a lot of guys who are now NHL players. Mark Pisick, one of them, my mm-hmm. good buddy, plays for the Florida Panthers now. I used to go into scrums, and I used to ask some of the most silly questions in scrums. I would say, for example...
Purposefully?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
because why not? Because...
Hey, I've been there where I asked some of the silliest questions, but it wasn't on purpose. Like, I was just trying to say something. But it's good when you go in, and that was kind of part of the plan.
But
you had.
I would do it, though. Like, I would be educated on, of course, I wouldn't come across trying to be a clown. I would tie it back into how the player played.
Yeah.
But I would say, for example, Mark, you know, you had two goals. What was it like going out there giving 114.6%?
Yeah.
And Holmstrom burst out laughing, like, 100, like, what, 114%?
Yeah, not just 110. Yeah, not just 105%, 114.6.
Yes, and that kind of stuff got to be where the player's like, okay, he's kind of funny. And being, when I covered junior hockey, I was 18, 19. I was these guys' age.
Yeah.
They could relate. Or I would come out and say, hey, this is back when, I remember, NHL 11 came out.
Yeah.
And I ripped these guys because back when EA Sports are adding in the junior players, all the ratings were like 40 overall, 50 overall, 51 overall. So I would say to someone, hey, Mark, NHLM came out. You kind of suck in this game. I'd be like, what? What do you mean I suck? Yeah. And they'd go see their ratings.
Yeah. And that's always, it's interesting how it's such a soft spot for players, you know, how they're rated in the games and how it all comes out.
Mm-hmm. I think that'd be so funny. But yeah, it's like I really took advantage of the fact that when I was starting media, I was, like I said, I was the same age as guys who were coming into the league or new players, because why would you not want to take advantage of that? Because end of the day, these guys who are 19, when you're 19, they have probably the same struggles you have. It's probably be it homework, be it family life, be it movies, girls, whatever. Like, relate to that. Play to your strength, I felt, in that instance.
You spent some time in radio as well, didn't you? As part of an internship?
Mm-hmm, at TSN, what is now TSN Radio 1260.
Is that where you found your love for this delivery of information and this way of communicating with people? Or did your love of radio predate you working
there? Oh, that predates that.
Yeah.
That really predates that, because I actually used to go into, when it was still Team 1260, I used to go in when I was like 13, 14 years old as a fill-in co-host. Because I used to love, back when calling you sports radio shows wasn't seen as annoying.
Yeah.
And it was seen as cool. I used to do it when I was 13 years old. And when I did it, I would reference players from the 60s and 70s and tie back into modern day players. And the host back then said, you have to get this kid in the studio, because what does a kid who is 14 know about Dale Howard, Chuck?
Right.
Or what does a kid who's 14 know about Bill Walton's stats with the Blazers?
So how did you come across, what made you educated in stats from the 60s and 70s?
Honestly, like, I was just, you ask my parents, I was the biggest sports nut. Like, I loved playing sports. I grew up playing basketball and baseball, but I just, when I was like 4 years old, I would, of course, typical kid, watch cartoons, whatever, in the mornings, but I would go and I would watch NBA on NBA and NBC, and I would just memorize stats or memorize how players play and whatever. And my parents used to buy me all these kinds of books, and I would read like a novel on, say, Scottie Pippen, like 100 pages, I would read it in an hour. Or there was, do you remember a book used to be called, it was Total NHL.
Okay.
It was 400 page book on just stats in NHL and NHL stories. 400 pages. My parents thought, okay, he likes sports, we'll let him do this. I read 200 pages in one day.
Holy smokes.
200 pages. And my dad used to go through and He used to flip to a random page and he used to write a random page, like page 200 and whatever.
Would he tell you what the page was?
He would tell you the page, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But he wouldn't say what the fact was.
Right.
He would say, okay, Gordie Howe played 1979-80. How many goals did he score in his last year in NHL? I would say 15 goals, 41 points overall. And I'd go, holy crap. Like, how? I used to go to like dinner with my dad's friend and parents' friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it asked me, he's kind of sad. I would just see grown men and women just like stunned at the table, like, doesn't make any sense.
It's amazing how the brain can just be tuned to that.
Yeah.
And just pick it up and retain it.
But you know what's the funny thing about that, though, Clayton? Is in school, I was a horrible math student. I failed math multiple times. And teachers didn't get it, because I had teachers in junior high who were also sports nuts. But they found it so odd in a sense how I could analyze stats and break down plays, but yet give me an algebra question, and I was getting like a 2 out of 10 on a test.
Right.
It baffled them in school.
I think it's a different part of the brain, though. You know, what one part, because one is a problem that you're trying to work out, and the other is the retention and memory of numbers.
Yes.
Right? And it's almost unfair. It's like, if I could be a good painter, but I might not remember, you know, everyone's face photographically.
Right.
Right? Someone could say, well, you're a visual learner or interpreter. You're like, yeah, but they're very different things here.
Yeah, they really is. Because, yeah, I remember one day, I laugh about it now, but because my parents were called, and my parents can tell you, they don't know math either. So going home, and once I got past grade 6, it was, okay, kid, you're on your own. We don't know this.
Yeah.
I remember one day, I got a glimpse of the class average for math scores. And I saw kids, okay, 91%, 85%, 73%, 65%. And then there was me all the way down, Avery, 42%.
Avery.
I brought down the whole class average, like grade 8.
So when you started the podcast, how old were you at that point?
I was 15 years old.
You're 15 when you started Avery Sports.
Yes.
And what were you using? Because technology, like, we sit here and I joke, I said, we just upgraded, you know, our little podcast desk that we have here. And I have seen, even in the last 4 years, podcasting equipment jump leaps and bounds.
Yes.
So when I'm looking at 2008, What's a 15-year-old you saying to get the message and get stuff out there?
I was using a Nokia flip phone.
Get what?
Yes.
So how did Blog Talk Radio, did you have to call into a service?
You would call into a service.
And they would record it for
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
And you were just using your cell phone. Yep.
And I would go into my desktop at home and edit things and then share it.
Wild. So you call a phone number.
Yep.
Talk your show over a phone, but then edit it online.
Exactly.
Jesus.
That's 2008. And I remember my first show, I remember my first ever episode was me breaking down the 2008 NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
And it was a game in which I think it was the Heat and the Celtics. It was a game in which P.J. Brown went off the bench for like 17 points. So I broke down P.J. Brown having a huge scoring day.
I would imagine you never lived in a world necessarily where time constraints mattered, right? Because everything, now you did work obviously with the radio station with CTV, but I spent, and it's so weird and so hard to break in your brain, but I spent a number of times first in an outside production company, then working with Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, where everything is in like 6-minute segments.
Yes.
Each show was 23:50, just under 24 minutes, or 44 minutes if you're doing an hour. But I imagine at such a young age, being able to start your own show, the length of time to you didn't always matter.
No, it didn't back then. I mean, once I got older and started learning how the industry worked, of course, I did get it more. When I was 15, I was just talking to the world. I was talking sports. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to find a platform. I literally just one day on Google Googled, how do I host a sports show? And Blog Talk came up.
Get out.
Dead serious. Really? That's the true story. God's honest truth.
So all of this is hilarious, first of all, because it all leverages social media.
Yes.
Which, as you brought up, wasn't a thing in 2000. Well, it wasn't. Like, we had Facebook at the time,
but
we had YouTube, but it wasn't to the extent that we see today.
No.
Where we live off our Twitter and Instagram feeds. Yet a lot of this is based on podcasting, which was not a form, like a popular way of getting information out there, and social media, which for all intents and purposes didn't exist.
No. It really did not. And when I see kids now who are in university starting up their own podcast, or I see 18-year-olds, I think to myself, you have no idea how hard it was to do a podcast 10 years ago. You guys have no idea. You kids
these days have it so easy. You sound like your dad already.
I kind of do, but it's like, they guys don't, because you can go on Periscope or whatever. You can start a show just like that on your phone. You couldn't do that in 2008.
But what's interesting, I think what we're finding now, is that because everyone can do it, and because it's so easy to do it, that not many people do. Right? Because literally, I could grab my phone, it's in the other room, but we could, as you said, start a Periscope, live Instagram, right? Instagram Live. It shows how old I am, I say it wrong. Right? Facebook Live, YouTube Live. We could go live with anything, we could have a show.
We can.
But when everyone goes live, that you're only getting, you know, your friend next door and the kid you hang out with school listening to you. It's almost in a weird way, I think, started a pushback where less people are doing it now.
Yes.
Because it feels like everyone's doing it.
It's true. And I think now too, especially if you're a younger person, like my thing was, I've been a huge, I will talk any sport anytime. I think you're seeing a lot now, a lot of kids are trying to be, they're trying to do hockey or baseball when the market's already saturated for those sports so much.
Right.
There's already so many hockey podcasts out there. I mean, there's so many jokes on Twitter about there being 1,000 hockey podcasts.
And if not
really,
more.
Yeah. And no one's really making a real differentiation. Like there was 6-7 years ago. A lot of them, I mean, there are still great ones out there. There are hockey podcasts which are great. I know Steve Dangle, his show was innovative.
His show is incredible because Dangle has such a presence about him.
Yes.
Like, not just like a dent in the social media landscape and YouTube, but he has such a presence on the microphone.
It's true.
That he can add so much dynamic to whatever story is coming out.
And you know what's funny with Dangle is that I've known Steve, like I've known Jeff for a very long time. If Steve gives you the rub, people will approach you in the street and say, I know who you are.
Right.
It's happened before where I've had people come to me referencing Dangle. It's like, holy crap. You know who I am? And why are you stalking me?
Yeah.
I'll call the cops. Yeah.
But he does have that influence and that power because in the same way, he just started a thing naturally out of something he could do with a webcam, you know, in his room talking, ranting about the Leafs. And at the time, it was the Leafs' dismal failures. But he so naturally was able to convey that. And then he's obviously developed his his delivery over the years. But it came from such a spot of innocence.
It's true. And now the man is out. It's funny. I was out with buddies of mine watching one of the Oilers games. And there's Steve in a commercial with Mark Savard, like, wow.
They were learning hockey tricks, or they were on the ice, weren't they? Yeah, doing little hockey moves or whatever.
I don't care any time to see it, though. Seeing your friend on a 3-foot screen is horrifying.
It is weird. I feel bad for them, because I think the only thing more awkward than seeing your friend on a 30-foot screen would be seeing yourself on a 30-foot screen. Yes. I don't know if I could handle that kind of pressure.
No, or your face on a book, because that's even more weird dangle.
Yeah.
Because Steve, like, it's funny. I woke up in the middle of the night, and I need to use the washroom. There's Steve's face looking at me in my pajamas. Like, wow, this is kind of weird.
You leave Steve's book in the bathroom?
So, yeah.
Now you're figured out. Now he knows. No, I'm not going to pretend that Steve listened to this podcast. No chance. You commented on your ability to kind of flip between sports. Yeah. Is that something you've relied on over the years?
Oh, absolutely. Because I don't know if you know the term sportsman. It is a very old-fashioned term from, I believe, around 1910s that refers to a sports enthusiast. It refers to people like the King Clancy's back in the day who were hockey players and football players and also referees. It's an old English term. My mom uses it all the time, because back in Trinidad, if you were a sportsman, you were someone who played cricket, but also you were editing the local newspaper and you were playing soccer. It's a term people don't use here. And basically, it's supposed to mean you're a jack of all trades in the sports world. And it benefits me, because I feel like, I mentioned saturation. You want to be able to find a way to get ahead, because if you can't get ahead in hockey, try getting ahead in basketball or tennis or track and field. Or I found a great niche. I've started getting a lot of attention in rugby league. I've covered the Wolfpack.
And great year for the Wolfpack this year, wasn't it?
It is. I've covered them from the start. And from that, I've now started covering a lot of Super League and the NRL. So I've now started writing for a site called The Roar Sports in Australia, which is based in Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
So I now have people from Fox Sports Australia now following me. And I look at that in a sense where, you know, this is a big world, Clayton. There are over 140 countries in the world. But yet, in sports, we kind of stick to, if you're not making it big in Canada or in America, you're irrelevant. We kind of forget that.
Right.
You can go be the biggest thing in Australia. Go be the biggest thing in Japan. Go be the biggest thing in England. There are so many more places you can be iconic in the sports world than just here in North America. I figure, why not go and try it?
I got my start. I've told this story a couple times on the podcast, but I got my start in music writing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I learned then at a very young age, was the idea, and because it applies to musicians, that sure, being big in the United States brings with it, you know, a certain level of prestige or whatever, but you can go and you can tour Australia or Japan, like you mentioned, or anywhere through Western Europe or Eastern Europe.
Right.
Or all these niche places. You could go and tour because you found a fan base there, and you could continually make a living off of it. I think of a Canadian band, The Tea Party, and we were joking about them in the office because it seems like one of those Canadian bands that were here and then they're gone. But then we realized the lead singer was just performing like either the coming weekend or the weekend that had just passed in Australia. Same kind of thing, because you can just earn a fan base around the world. And as long as you're servicing them, that is as legitimate a job as anything else you're doing, whether it be in North America or not.
It's true. It really is. I mean, and what's the harm? Because I have friends. I have a friend of mine who is now writing down in Australia for a newspaper, and he loves it. Like, I don't see the harm in that. I mean, of course, there's the whole thing, you know, about not wanting to leave your comfort zone. But in the media world, you got to try new things in the media world, because to an extent, I feel like in media, in Canada, we're almost spinning our wheels to an extent, because there's a lot of great people in media, but we do a lot of the same thing. In certain parts of media in Canada, we're not risk takers, to be quite blunt.
Yeah.
You'll see a lot of risk in media, especially in sports. For some reason, people will take risks in the news. They'll take risks in comedy. But when it comes to sports, oh no, don't joke too much. Don't have too much fun.
Right.
But you see on NBA on TNT, you got Kenny Smith shoving Shaq into a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
You would never see that on Hockey Night in Canada.
NBA and TNT is, it honestly, is next level. Everything they've done with that brand and on that network, I think, just keeps pushing the boundaries of what we could do and what's acceptable. Because you brought up Shaq.
Yeah.
He was criticized and made fun of. And I think he still is to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
But then he becomes so beloved and endeared to the audience that they're almost waiting and anticipating these kind of gag moments or these over the top moments.
Right.
And that's what we get out of it. And that's what we take away that enriches and changes our life for the night, because the game is always going to be the game.
Exactly. And I mean, I mentioned Shaq, and Shaq spoke freely about the Daryl Morey situation, thinking about how he supports Daryl Morey and saying how he should be able to have free speech. And I look at that and I think to myself, how many other athletes, how many other media pundits would get that political on a sports program and not be reprimanded? Like, so many other channels would say, you can't do that, you can't go there. But NBA and TNT never shied away from racial issues or political issues on their program. Never have.
Did you, looking at niche sports, was it junior hockey that you got your start? Was that going to be the, and not that hockey is a niche sport in Canada, but going to a junior level might be like the strong avenue in, instead of thinking like, oh, I'm going to write about the Oilers.
Yeah.
You went to the Oil Kings.
I did. Yeah. That was a great way. Cause I met a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of players I met there who are now playing pro, my friends for life. I met a lot of media members, because when you're covering junior hockey, if every once in a while in the CHL, you'll get double headers. And so if there's a certain city that shares the NHL market, you might get Oil Kings play 11 a.m. Oilers Flames 7 p.m. So you might get a chance to meet the big wigs of a team, because they're milling around in the morning around the arena. That was how I met Kevin Lowe that way. I got a chance to build a little bit of a rapport with Kevin Lowe. And I never forget, I think it was 2012, I met Kevin Lowe one time, said hello, gave him my card. And I think it was, I met him like 6 months later, and he referenced an episode of my podcast. Like, wait a minute, you listen to my show? And my mom, she told me that, don't ever think people in these fields are not paying attention. They may not acknowledge it fully, but they're watching. Like, they want to see what you can either bring or you're saying about them. Like I said, and it may sound a little bit arrogant, but she had a point. Like, never assume people don't know who you are in this industry. Never do that.
I don't want to say I copied you. I followed a very similar route. Mm-hmm. Like, we're very parallel routes in the sense that when I decided to get into sports, because I was in music and then I was in automotive, when I decided to get into sports, I targeted the Toronto Marlies. And for much of the reason what you had just described, like, I'm not going to break through, especially in a Toronto market.
Exactly.
I'm not going to make a ripple if I try to yell Leaf stuff from the rooftop. Mm-hmm. But I remember going to a game one time and looking around and being like, wow, this is really underserviced.
Yes.
And realize that there's stories to be told here. And there's information that people want to take in and they want to be consumed by. They just don't know it yet. And then from there, you kind of, much as you said, you have your doubleheader nights. You have, you know, no one has the ability to watch everything all the time, but you will get some of your, we'll call them, at the time we call them mainstream media. Now I'm just going to call them like higher up the food chain media who can pop in every, you know, couple weeks or one game a month or something. Mm-hmm. And you develop relationships that way.
That's
and
true.
You become that source of information that they might use. And I'm not talking information like so-and-so's being traded.
Right.
I'm just talking like who's playing well.
Exactly.
Or what's the line combinations that night.
Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah, with the Oil Kings, when they run their playoff runs, you would see the mainstream media. You'd see these guys from CTV come or Global or whatever. They ask me, like, who's on the hot streak? Who's this? Because they want to know, because they've been busy covering the Oilers, the Eskimos. And I've been the one guy who was covering the Oil Kings. And with that, I also met Steve Yzerman one night. I was walking to the press box, went to my seat. Who's in my seat? Steve Yzerman. We were hired by the Lightning. It's like, do I tell Stevie why he has to move, or do I just sit beside him?
You just sit beside him. You probably. I remember one time I was in Oshawa. I was in London. That's where I was. And it was at the rookie tournament games, mm-hmm. and John Ferguson Jr. was in front of me in line, and they couldn't find his pass because they had all the media passes spread out on a table. That's and this funny. Is after he had left his time with the Maple Leafs. He was now a scout, I believe, in the San Jose Sharks organization. Mm. They have all these media passes spread over the table, and they're looking, and they're like, sir, we can't find your name. What did you say it was again? And he's like, John Ferguson. And this poor person behind the desk had no clue who he was Uh-oh. Or what importance he had held in, right. or his family had held in the hockey world. And they end up writing him a new one, hands it to him. They then can't find my pass. And she says, oh, don't worry. She picks up like a random pass, puts a white sticker over it, writes my name. Well, it was John Ferguson's pass underneath it. So in the same way, like, you end up in circles with people yes. that you have been familiar with mm-hmm. or have been in one way or another influential in your life for a long time in these really common scenarios, just like someone sitting in your seat or being handed his pass that had been whited out with a different name.
Yeah. And I'll say this too for a term to me. I'll say this too. I know you're someone who you're someone who's killing it with the TFC game in terms of all the content. I got to give you your props for that.
Thank you.
And what I like about that is because I think Major League Soccer is so open to new things. And they're so open to just different things. Like I covered TFC for the past 3 years, loved it. And what you've done with TFC has just been some of the best content because I've seen your work, Clayton, and you've been around TFC from the
2013,
highs.
Yeah.
You've been around the lowest of lows to yeah. the highest of highs.
I think, thank you, first of all. It's very kind of you to say. But I'm going to do what everyone in our industry probably does, and I'm just going to defer all the praise because for me, I was at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment at a really, really interesting time. First of all, we had a dynamic digital department when I had started there. So they brought me in. When they first brought me in on the Marley's front, I was doing nothing. Like, I was just writing Marley stuff and I was selling freelance articles. And they realized that, oh, maybe having a Marley's presence is a good idea.
Yeah.
And they brought me in first as a writer, and that role kind of developed. But then in 2012 was when Toronto FC had an abysmal year. And they did something that I will always remember and I find very wise. They took all the content creators, like from the digital side, mm-hmm. and they put us all in one meeting. And this was about the middle of the season. And they said, guys, what do we do? Because we can't, you know, as members of the media, you can't affect the on-field results.
Right. No, exactly.
There's nothing you can do there. But they had the openness to be like, okay, I'm going to bring in basketball people and I'm going to bring in hockey people
yes.
and soccer people and like business people. I'm going to bring everyone into one room and say, best idea wins. Like, what are some of your ideas? And that was what sparked All for One eventually in enough time. That sparked All for One, which started in 2013. And we had, in a way, we call it the Wild West because we kind of had free rein to create whatever stories and chase whatever yes. storylines we wanted. But I look back now and I think maybe that was almost by design, that they knew that by micromanaging and by just forcing you to create the same things they had always created, we were never going to plow through. And I credit Jeff Landicho, who is the creator and producer behind Open Gym, which is a wildly popular TV show now in its eighth season, I believe. It doesn't hurt that the Raptors just became champions.
Oh, not
but
at all.
But Open Gym did very well before then. I had the ability to work alongside him and see, you know, in our first seasons what he was doing and try to take some best practices away from him, who's a very experienced and very accomplished producer. But Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment at that time just allowed us the freedom to be like, no, you're passionate about this. Go chase it. Just make good shit.
Yeah.
And they let us just set that bar and leave it open. And as you had said, MLS definitely helps with that because there's a humility about the players mm-hmm. and there's an openness with the public relations staff that they want, that they're open to trying new things. We have limits. Everyone has limits.
Of course.
But they're open to trying new things, and that's where it came out of.
Yeah, and I look at MLS. I mean, I remember being around TFC in 2013, 2014, and just seeing how the TFC went from the, to be quite blunt, the doormats of Major League Soccer. I remember being at MLS Cup 2016 and thinking, this is surreal. This was the team that was the, quote, worst team in the world.
Yes.
And now they're playing.
In 2012, correct. 100%.
And now they're playing
quote,
for a
quote
time.
Is correct, too. Yes. It was straight quoted out of their lead striker, Danny Kuvermans, that they were the worst team in the world.
Yeah. And it just blew me away to see BMO rocking. Mm-hmm. I remember that was a night where that was one of the coolest nights I've been outside of me, man. I froze my tail off.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It was funny because I don't think TFC kind of planned for that much media. I don't think they really grasped how much media was coming because it was the Fox, ESPNs, and of course the local content. And then they had the bloggers. And then they had the overflow for the bloggers. I was sitting in like row 320, whatever, in the cold, and MLS, credit to MLS, they gave me like a bag full of hand warmers, mm-hmm. but sitting outside minus 10 was still painful.
Very painful. and that was, I don't want to point any fingers at anyone because I love both TFC and MLS. MLS comes in and they kind of take over for MLS Cup.
Fair enough.
Right? That becomes a league event. Mm-hmm. And you had to imagine that they may have asked themselves questions as to, okay, we're as north as we can be in this league right now.
Yes.
It's going to be cold. I don't know how many American media members will travel. I can't say that Seattle-Toronto was the sexiest matchup for mm-hmm. them, right? Because if you have like a Toronto-LA at the time, that may have generated a little bit more buzz, but you go to Seattle, and no offense to Seattle,
no,
but
not at all.
You know, they're not the hub of MLS news coming out. And out of the East, you could imagine that MLS would prefer New York Red Bull to be there or one of those bigger teams. And so they could have very honestly underestimated, as you said, how many media members were going to show up and brave the cold that night and stick through extra time and overtime mm-hmm. and penalty kicks.
Yes.
In what was a frigid. I've talked to a lot of people about that night. The decision split whether 2016 or 2017 was colder. I 100% think 2016 was far colder. And I was on the field both times, and 2016 was near unbearable.
Like, I feel bad for you being down there. I cannot imagine just being down there the entire game. At least being up top, you did get some relief. But being down there, oh gosh.
And they gave us prime positions on the inside of like the signage that goes up on the rubber matting, you know, just feet away from the touchline. But the rule was we weren't allowed to move because if we moved, we'd be obstructing people's views.
Oh, jeez.
So for a 45-minute first half,
yes,
a 15-minute intermission, a 45-minute second half, a 30-minute overtime, and penalty kicks, we weren't allowed to move. And I had these incredible people, you know, the fans who were sitting first row, one handed me their scarf, another handed me hand warmers. Yeah. Someone asked me if I wanted hot chocolate, and they get it for me, which is just incredible to have gone through in and of itself. I said no to the hot chocolate. That would have interrupted trying to shoot. But yeah, that night was a cold one in Toronto, and it ended so bitterly.
Yes.
With TFC losing. That it just kind of, I remember I had nothing left at the end of the game. Like, and I wasn't even playing. Like, I had to sit there and move a camera. But I was, all the overtime that we'd put in, all the hours, all the long nights, all this stuff, it hit me all at one moment. And that was at the final whistle of that game. And thankfully, I had a good group of, like, a crew there that we knew that we had jobs to do if Seattle won.
Yes.
But I had already assigned them. I'm like, if Seattle wins, you're the one who goes and gets the trophy celebration, and you're the one who gets on-field reaction, and I'm just going to pack my gear and go home.
No.
Because I was tired.
I can imagine.
It was cold.
But you know what's funny with that game was that I got a cool interview after that game. I interviewed a defender, Zach Scott. He had played in Seattle almost his entire pro career. He played with the Sounders from before they were even an MLS team, back to USL days.
USL, yeah.
And I was walking around trying to find somebody, and I could tell they were trying to shuffle the media out of there. It was getting late. So I figured, you know what? Let me go talk to him with his last career game. And I sat down with him for a good 20 minutes, just chit-chatting about what it's like being a full-time Seattle guy, whatever. And this my interview was the last he did as an active player.
Really?
I got lots of people a player before he retired. And that was so cool to talk to a guy who just won the title. Gave me half an hour of reflecting on what it's like being a mentor to Clint Dempsey and playing in various leagues and then to end your career as a champion. And on Twitter next day, and YouTube article next day to his 20,000 followers, like, thank you.
Yeah. That's neat how we have the privilege of being present at some of those moments. Because, and I say this very matter-of-factly, us being there, you or me, really doesn't change the moment for them. Like, they're in a mindset and they're in a headspace, and we're just like the goof that's lucky enough to hold the microphone and ask the right question, right? Like, that's the privilege we have of getting to be there. But it is truly, when you get to witness those moments and be present for them, it's things that you remember. Well, we're now 3 years after.
Yeah.
And you still recall it.
Exactly.
Top of mind.
Well, also, champagne sucks out of your clothing.
Sam. It's terrible. Like, try getting out of a camera.
Oh, my God.
It is so bad.
I can't imagine. I've been involved in 3 different teams winning a title, and every time I come home singing something like champagne, it's, you know, and you're in the moment thinking, yeah, this is cool. When you walk into the arena, it's like, I stink.
Yes, you reek afterwards. So what are the, I'm guessing Seattle is one of them.
Yep.
What are the other two?
Other two was in 2011, when we used to have independent pro baseball in Edmonton. The Edmonton Capitals won what was called the Golden Baseball League Championship. And I was one of the few beat writers there who covered every single game. And I got right in there. And they started spraying champagne on the mound. So I took a full blast, and my jeans stunk of champagne, jacket sucks champagne, hat stinks. And third time was last year, the Grey Cup, when the Stampeders won the Grey Cup.
Right.
Myself, my co-host, some other
long part, overdue for the Stamps.
I know, like, right? They never win.
They
dang
have
it.
Been so good for so long, and they long earned that
though.
Win last year.
They did. And being in the locker room, it was just, one, they're spraying, like I said, spraying the champagne, spraying the beer. And this was by far the worst blast I ever got. Like, my pants were, my right leg was entirely drenched.
Wow.
I peed myself. Yeah. And we're there, and my co-host, my brother podcast, Brad Barco, he's the inspiration himself. He has cerebral palsy, so he's in a wheelchair. And I think it was Jerome Breskison, and I want to say Bolivar Mitchell. They brought over the Grey Cup and asked him, do you want to drink from it? So on our show Instagram profile, is Brad drinking from the Grey Cup. They poured like full buckets of beer and champagne in him to drink out of.
Incredible.
And the beauty is that, the nice thing about being a podcast host in that sense is that we got our audio on, we got our stuff on field. We did our recap on field. We got our plans. Like, for content for next day, we're good.
Yeah.
We don't need to go back in and file a story. So we stayed in the locker room for knows how long. And it was just so cool seeing that, being around the players. Because that, like, you got guys who've been in the CFL for who knows how long, and this is the pinnacle for them. And to see it just the utter joy, and what do people want to say? Oh, what's the CFL? It's Canadian football. All these guys, this was a thing they'll tell their kids for 50, 60 years.
Completely.
Yeah.
Well, you spoke about the International Baseball League that Edmonton had.
Yeah.
Though they're living through a championship.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. You know, when my beer league team wins a championship, I don't care that none of us will be pro.
No.
We just want to win
exactly.
In whatever capacity we're in.
It's right. No, I was in junior high. I set the record for most goals by a defenseman in ball hockey at 4 in a game. And I didn't care I'll never play pro hockey.
No. Oh, that is ball. None of that. You're like, no, I'll take the record. Thank you very much. With all your experience in many different leagues and many different sports, let's stick with sports, not leagues.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go around the horn and we'll kind of talk through kind of current affairs of a couple of them.
Sure.
But I want you first to rank. You said you grew up on basketball.
Yes.
Is that still your first love?
I would say it still is. I would say it still very much is. But I'm one of those kids who I'm still a very much big fan of the of NBA 90s because that was what I grew up on. Like,
it's 2019.
I know, but I just like, to me, the rivalries aren't the same as what they were now. Like, you don't like, you don't have any Knicks Heat rivalries now like right. you did 20 years ago. And people say, oh, that basketball was ugly. But it was just, that was Adam Mosse. That was when it was at his best. I loved watching the Heat Knicks play to a 78-77 game because that was all a battle. And I loved, like, one of my favorite players was Allen Houston growing up.
Allen Houston was one of your guys.
Loved Allen Houston.
So, basketball one. What sport's going to take two?
Two, hockey.
Two is hockey. Yes. Three?
Three, I would say three is football.
CFL football?
I would split between CFL and NFL.
Who's your NFL team?
Green Bay.
Green Bay?
Yes, I'm a Green Bay guy.
I always joke that Green Bay is like, and I say this very nicely to any Leafs fans out there, but they're like that's a lie. I used to say about the Dallas Cowboys. Anyway, I used to say the Dallas Cowboys were the Maple Leafs, the NFL. Like, if you don't like the NFL, you like the Dallas Cowboys because that's just kind of represent the league and the sport. Yeah. In and of itself, Green Bay is kind of the same. But, okay, longtime Packers fan.
Yes.
I'll take that. And then number four?
Four is baseball.
Is baseball? Yeah. And then soccer is five or soccer six?
You know, soccer is
soccer
like,
seven.
Soccer's fifth.
Soccer's eight.
No, soccer is fifth. It's all fivers. Yeah, I know. Like, I know. I grew up, being with immigrant parents, you gotta have soccer in there somewhere. But, yeah, I grew up playing soccer with friends, but I enjoyed covering soccer more. Like, to me, I felt the soccer world is so fun. Like, I always tell people with soccer, you should watch more of your own soccer in your backyard. Like, I have friends who we can watch MLS, we can watch EPL, we can watch La Liga, but I have almost no friends who like MLS. I have very few friends who like Major League Soccer. I almost got into a fight once at a bar over that with an Australian dude.
Over Major League Soccer?
Yeah, because we're outside a bar. I figured, hey, he's a cool dude, and we're talking about soccer. And I asked him, hey, do you ever watch soccer here? And do you ever watch MLS? And he goes, oh, you watch that effing nonsense.
Right.
Oh, you're not a real soccer fan. You're like, what's wrong with you, bud? Like, I don't get that.
It's great soccer. Have you watched any CPL yet this year?
I have, yes.
So we're on actually the eve, when we're recording this, is the eve before the first of a two-leg championship series. For CPL, FC Edmonton would be your home squad,
yes.
Not in it. York 9, which would be my home squad, also not in it. So we can kind of be neutrals at this one.
We can be.
It's going to be Forge FC versus Cavalry. Mm-hmm. By the time this is released, I think the championship, both games will be over. So do you want to, for fun, say who's going to win?
Sure.
We can place friendly wager bets.
I will. You know what? They've been so dominant in both the spring and fall season.
Cavalry?
Yes, I'll go Cavalry.
Like, I'm with you. I'm not gonna oppose you on that.
What Tommy Wheeldon has done with that side has been so impressive. And remember, this is Calgary's first pro soccer team in some 25 years.
It is, but it's an evolution of the PDL side that was there before.
Yes.
And I think that's what really helped them. I think that they had some structure there and a way of doing things a little bit ahead. And I'm kind of talking up my butt a little bit because I don't like I'm not 100% up on CPL news.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there was a structure and a form there. And I think that's what's really helped them walk through the season.
It has.
And as you said, be dominant through the first and second half.
No, but it is a really fun league. And covering FC Edmonton, the oldest league, because they were around before in various incarnations, different leagues. Watching what the FC Edmonton has done, like, that is a team. People out there, remember the name Easton Ungaro. 19 years old, 6'6", scored 10 goals in the fall season. The kid's going to be good. He'll be in Europe eventually, sooner than you think.
Interesting. There you are, a little bit of FC Edmonton news. You said your very first sport is basketball,
mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit of NBA. Have you been able to catch any of the first week action?
I have, yes.
And thoughts? Well, did you catch the first Raptors game?
I did.
Or did you go to West Coast games?
I watched both. Like, I want to see the Raptors. I want to see defending champs. And to me, anyone who thinks the Raptors are going to take a hilariously long tumble down to 8th or 9th.
It's wild.
It's not going to happen.
No. You know who's going to take a hilariously long tumble, unfortunately, is the Golden State Warriors. I think
it's
fair.
Looking like that.
I think it's fair to say that their run has come to an end. Mm-hmm. The dynasty has officially come to an end at the hands of the Raptors, just saying. But they were embarrassed by the Clippers just last night.
Yeah.
And with Klay looking to be out for the year,
mm-hmm.
I think it was Shaq the other night who said on the broadcast, right to Klay's face, because Klay Thompson was on the broadcast, he's like, you just don't have the scorers on the team. He's like, you look down, you might get 30 out of Steph.
Right.
You might get 20, you might get 15. He's like, but you don't get 90 points a night out of this team.
No.
And you're just not going to see it.
No, exactly. And fittingly enough, Kawhi shuts down Oracle and Kawhi shuts down Chase.
Very, very good point. It's only been two games, but I think it's hard not to vote for the Clippers to be the strong team out of the West, if not the league.
They'll be a team. They'll be a fun team to watch. They're going to impress a lot of people. I think they'll probably be the third seed in the Western Conference.
Third seed in the West.
Third.
Behind who?
You know what?
Don't say the Lakers.
No, I think this is going to be a wild year in the NBA. You're going to see the Western Conference, to me, is going to be interesting. I'm going to say
your comments are interesting.
Nuts. People are going to call me nuts, but I'm going to tell you, watch over the Denver Nuggets. They're going to be first in the Western Conference.
Did Dylan,
Denver.
Is that you cheering? Dylan's in agreement with your Denver Nuggets prediction. Yeah. I think you're full of it. but I hope so. I love Jamal Murray. We were lucky enough to do a piece with him a year and a half back. And so we've been fans of him ever since. So Denver Nuggets is your pick for number one.
Yes.
And then Houston, the second team.
Houston, number two.
And then number three being the Clippers.
Yep.
And out of the East, where do you, Raptors, do you think they're still top three?
I think they're fourth. They'll be fourth in the Eastern Conference.
Okay, and who's in front of them?
I think Philadelphia is still going to be a good team. I think Philadelphia will still be around. I think in the East, I think Boston's going to be a team that will still be one of the perennial good teams in the conference.
Nope.
You don't think so?
Nope.
I think Boston's going to surprise some people.
Fuck the Celtics.
I think Boston's going to surprise.
Nope, they're done.
You think so, eh?
And I don't put as much stock in Philly as everyone else does either.
Indiana will be too.
I think they're interesting. I think Philly is interesting. I don't know if they're going to be good.
Good point.
Like, I just don't.
There's a difference.
Like, that's Joel Embiid's great. Like, I'm not. That's mean to say. I feel like they might take a step back over last year. I really thought they kind of had the team to do it last year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the addition of Al Horford is quite great. That being said, no one listened to this podcast for my basketball takes. Moving to hockey,
yes.
Your Edmonton Oilers.
Ooh.
Quite the start.
It has. And, you know, people at first were saying, oh, James Neal, it's a bad player for a bad player. He only had one bad year. It was an aberration. This is the guy who averaged around 25, 30 goals a year. Look what he did in Vegas. Look what he did in Pittsburgh and Nashville. He just wasn't happy in Calgary.
And a bad player for a bad player trade doesn't mean a bad trade.
No. Exactly.
Right? That sometimes guys just need to shake up their surroundings.
Yeah.
And get with a different coach or get with different line mates.
Exactly. And you're seeing it for James Neal, 9 goals now. It's working out for him. And you're seeing now Milan Lucic, his career is taking a startling path from when he was a 30-goal guy to now having 3 points in Calgary.
Now, I don't want to go as far up as to say who will dominate the West in total, mm-hmm. but let's look at their teams around them when they have to play Vancouver, Calgary, and Winnipeg. Do you think there's any 3 of those teams can contend with what the Edmonton Oilers are bringing?
Ooh, Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg is the best team in my mind.
I think so.
Winnipeg still has, they still have Laine, they still have Kyle Connor, they still have Mark Scheifele. That's a team to watch, and we can pick one of those teams to challenge the Oilers.
Paul Maurice, first coach of the Toronto Marlies.
Yes.
I got to know him with his during his time in Toronto. He's one of my favorite coach. He's my favorite
coach.
He's my favorite coach in the NHL, and just got his 700th win. If we look at the East, my beloved Leafs, how are we going to do this year?
I think end of the day, you still have Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, William Nylander. You still
John Tavares.
And John Tavares. I keep forgetting he's now a Leaf.
And a captain. He's not just a Leaf. He's the captain. He's the top of them all.
But I think the Leafs, I think they will be a team that will finish top 4 in the Eastern Conference. That's a team, I think. But the big thing is that can you get out of the first round? You haven't gotten out of the first round since 2003, 2004.
Now, is this kind of like what the Jays find themselves in terms of the playoff format, that your division in the NHL, you got to play yourself out of teams like Boston all the time.
Yes.
You've got to play yourself out of Montreal has that ability to have a hot year and a dead year. Mm-hmm. But if you have a hot Montreal Canadiens team, you got to play yourself out of them and you got to play yourself out of Tampa Bay Lightning.
Exactly. It's not easy. And you mentioned Boston. I compare Toronto Boston to those old matchups when Edmonton would play Dallas. Every single year, it was the same team, but unlike Edmonton-Dallas, Toronto-Boston always goes to seven games.
Right.
Which I find...
And like, you can set your clock on it.
Yeah. And I remember I was at the last... I was watching with Steve Dangle. I was watching with him and his wife. We were watching the first game of the last Toronto-Boston series. And watching hockey with Steve when the Leafs are not doing well is an experience, because when it's Toronto Boston, I never had a buddy froth at the mouth when the Leafs give up goals. That's an experience.
Sometimes I wonder though, is he stressed out over the game, or is he stressed out over the fact that he has to now talk about this game after, and that just makes him mad that he's like, oh, now I gotta talk about this crap.
It is hilarious, but it's just so odd. You never see a team run into that same opposition 3 years in a row and get that same result over and over and over again in game seven. It doesn't happen.
And so hopefully this year will be the year that it doesn't happen anymore. The teams have played each other twice so far. They split the series 1-1, the home team winning each of them. So we will see. Now, if you can teach me one thing about the CFL this year, because I have not been following, the only thing I know is that the Argos are horrendous. If you can teach me one thing about the CFL this year, Avery, before we wrap up, what will it be?
It'll be that for the first time in a very long time, every team has had a starter knocked out of for at least one game. No starter has gone all 18 games. Every team has played a backup quarterback, which never happens.
So what does that mean, do you think, going forward as we enter the final weeks of the season and then playoffs?
Well, that means you're gonna see Edmonton is a team, they're gonna play Montreal in the Eastern Division final. And Trevor Harris, who came from Ottawa, he's recovering now. We're gonna see if he can get back into his form earlier this year, where he led Edmonton to a 5-1 start.
And then that's how you wrap up four sports. Oh, your fifth. You said your fifth favorite sport is soccer. You've got to love soccer. So let's just say now the game's going to be long done and dusted by the time this podcast comes out. But Toronto FC were, you know, days away from them going to the Eastern Conference Final to take on Atlanta United. Dylan has seen my picks. I have TFC actually going straight to the end this year, going right and facing LAFC in the final. LAFC, I think, last night we watched them play the LA Galaxy and finally exercise those demons, beating the Galaxy for the very first time. They're heading to the conference finals, but this could all be for naught because both teams could get knocked out in the finals when this comes out, and you all can just laugh at us and our bad sports picks. But that's what we're going to do. We should start a new podcast, and we're going to call it Bad Sports Picks.
Original, right?
But I'm pretty sure there's more than enough people have done it. But we will start our own, and people will like us because that's what they do on the internet. Avery, it was great having you here. I've kept you longer than the hour. That's why that handy clock goes up, so that I know how much time I've been talking. I like to end the podcast the same way every single time. And that's because much with your life experience and I find with my life experience, finding a big outcome at the end all comes from a series of very small changes you can make. And I find it very easy to be consumed by my work and to be consumed by the things that we're doing. But it's smart for us every now and then to make a decision to buy some time out for ourselves and make sure we're keeping ourselves in check. And I think the simplest decision we can make is to eat our vegetables. So that's how I like to end every single podcast. So as I say, thank you to you, Avery, for coming by. Lewis McDougall. Love your last name. I don't know why it's not the Lewis McDougall sports show. You go with your first name. It'd be so much more fun if you went with your last name. Dylan's, who's on the Sliders. Sean, who's had a baby, and so he's not in anymore. Congrats, Sean, and everyone else who makes this podcast possible. We all say thanks, and please, please, please be good to yourself.
Eat your vegetables.
And eat your vegetables. Avery said it. He's got to be right.